The Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. Pete Zimmerman's the producer. Hi, it's John Williams again. So Mother's Day's on our minds a little bit today, and Tom Gimbel starts us off, the founder and CEO of LaSalle Network at thelasallenetwork.com. Hi again, Tom. I hope you're well.
I am doing great, John Williams. Always good to be with you.
I appreciate you coming on, and Mother's Day's right around the corner. You're actually trying to help more women get back into the workplace post-COVID. Is that right?
Yeah, it's always been a strength of ours and something we valued and tried to do. But now coming out of COVID, you've got really two things. Number one is people who've been bottled up for over a year and want to get out and work. And secondarily, if their spouses lost their jobs during COVID, the family needs dual income that they didn't need before. So there's just a bigger need for it right now.
Well, didn't the pandemic hit women harder than it hit men?
Yeah, I'm not sure I always believe in the statistics from that standpoint. I think that it hit them from a standpoint of stress because more women tend to be the lead caretaker of children. However, I know that if women were great employees, that companies needed to keep their best people during COVID. So I think it hit them emotionally from a stress standpoint. I don't know if financially, aside from the fact that more women tend to be servers and working for hotels, it hit them that way, but not in comparison to a woman having the same job as a man, I don't believe it did.
Maybe in that case, although women are more servers and hotel workers and restaurant workers than men. So I'll bet from a numerical standpoint, just based on that, women may have suffered more than men in terms of job loss.
Yeah, I think if you put it into a whole group, that it probably did based on the amount of people. But, you know, what we're looking at now is women are realizing, you know, it's not 1950, and women is every bit as good, if not better, than a man to do jobs due to their attention to detail, due to their loyalty, blah, 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 blah. And there's absolutely zero reason that they shouldn't be considered for any job they want. And now with remote work, that people can do it and have a lot more flexibility and still be a primary caretaker if they need to be.
So how does that work? Are you trying to find jobs for women or, you know, anybody in general, but we're talking about women here particularly, that they can do from home or hybrid or back into the office, and then that maybe they need child support? What's going on here?
It's really both. And now with the vaccine, child care is a much easier thing for people to get, where people were afraid to go into the home or to have their kids go in. The vaccine is really the, to quote you're in my favorite movie, Willy Wonka, it's the golden ticket, John.
Yeah,
and that's how people are viewing it. And so to be able to move forward, we're seeing that a lot of working moms actually want to go back into the office. They're saying, hey, I've been at home for 15 months. And while I love being around my kids, I need to be around adults. I need to focus on accomplishing some tasks. So it's really more of hybrid. I'd like to be home part days, couple days a week, and figuring out that schedule for a new normal rather than demanding it's 24/7 from home.
Do you think there's going to be a growing population of people that just want some different real estate to look at when they're working out of the house? I don't know that people pine for their cubicles, but at least that's someplace different.
I'm a firm believer that the office isn't gone, that I believe it may take, you know, 18 months to 36 months for it all to shake itself out. But the idea of people being in an office, being collaborative, you know, anecdotally, I had a meeting this morning. Two people plus myself, three were in a conference room in our office. One was remote. The remote person couldn't hear the phone very well. They were getting pinged on their phone. There was an attention gap problem, and it was much easier for the people in the conference room. And as we grow and that option exists, it didn't exist a year ago, John. It exists now for some people to be together. And that's going to be the challenge, that you can move faster together than you can apart.
I was in a Zoom meeting with some staff members this week. There was about eight of us, about four of us in the meeting physically, about four of us not. And it was interesting, as you mentioned this, the dynamic. One of the people on the Zoom camera, you know, that we were watching on a screen, was busy doing another task. They were attentive to the meeting. I will credit this person with multitasking, because clearly they had other work to do. So they were doing that while they were tuned into the meeting. And then there were a couple of guys that were kind of cross-talking each other, and it was clunky. It was so I guess I saw the strengths and the weaknesses of working remotely that way.
Well, I was having a conversation with some people the other day about remote work and the Zoom prerogative, and they go, well, we always have our cameras off for our 8 a.m. Monday morning meeting.
Really?
And I said, well, if you were in the office, you couldn't put a pillowcase over your head and not show yourself for the meeting. You know, for some reason, etiquette has gone out the window because of staring at a screen versus staring at people. And I think eventually it's going to come full circle that's going to go out the window just for what you said. Whether the person can multitask or not, everybody else notices it, and then it creates them saying, well, if they can multitask, I can multitask.
Now I'm
and
looking
before
at my
you know
phone.
It,
yeah.
Everybody's looking at their phone, and everyone's not paying attention, and okay. You have real problems.
One last thing before I let you go. Tom Gimbel's on the line from LaSalle Network. You know, we've heard a lot about students and teachers trying to teach them without the cameras on. The teachers don't see the students in so many classrooms. They're just avatars. Yep. That happens in the workplace, too? The people don't turn their cameras on?
Yep, and I think it's terrible. I have a kid in high school. I think it's terrible, and I think it's terrible in the workplace that people go, oh, I don't require that. How can you not require that? It really gets back to holding people accountable. Is if you have rules for everybody, you need to have people follow them, or it begins to disseminate through the organization that I can do what I want, and all of a sudden you got somebody posting that they're at the Ritz-Carlton in Southern California on Instagram instead of being at the meeting, and everybody's jealous and hates everybody.
In celebration of Mother's Day this weekend, Tom Gimbel's team has launched a campaign to help moms return to the workforce. It's called Workforce Momentum, spelled the same way, but capital M-O-M. You can find out more at thelasallenetwork.com/workforce-momentum, thelasallenetwork.com. Okay, Tom, let's visit next week. Thanks for your time.
Always good to talk to you, John. Be safe.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. It's 12:20. Let's discover another business in Chicago. Maybe you've heard a little bit about this phenomenon. Maybe not. It's called Freight to Plate. It's run by Jacqueline and Mary Catherine Scala. Jacqueline, let's start with you. Welcome to the show. You're on WGN.
Awesome. Thank you. How are you?
I'm good. And Mary Catherine, you're there too, right?
I am right here with you guys. It's good to be on the air with you, John.
So Freight to Plate, it literally means freight, like those great big freight containers. Is that right, Catherine? Mary Catherine?
Yes, exactly. It's your standard shipping container that you see on freight trains. And, you know, every once in a while, they'll cut you off on the highway, or maybe you're cutting them off. But, standard shipping container, and it's retrofitted with a very high-tech hydroponic system. So we'll be growing all sorts of nutrient-dense greens year-round.
I guess that's one of the strengths of your business model, right? You all, Freight to Plate, that is, you are able to grow in these hydroponic gardens 365 days a year that way.
Absolutely. And, you know, because it's such a small, contained environment, we can make sure that we're growing in the middle of a Chicago winter, and we are keeping out environmental contaminants. So we're producing a product that's the best for your health and the best for the health of the planet as well.
Well, that's an important thing to you, all right, Jacqueline? That is, you came upon this because of some food issues yourselves and found that growing your own leafy green vegetables was beneficial, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I suffered with an autoimmune disorder that, you know, I went to every specialist, I was going to doctors, and nothing was working. And it really impacted my life that I, you know, I was, you know, just turned 30 years old, and I thought I was not be able to hold a steady job or work because I was so sick. And the one thing that helped me is I turned to a plant-based diet, and I completely reversed all the ailments that I was dealing with.
Wow.
And so it was pretty easy to think, how can I make this a part of my life going forward and make a career out of it? So growing my own leafy greens and vegetables is just a great way to keep my life healthy and to have a successful career.
Is it the business that you're in, though, not just to do it for you or your neighborhood, but you want to see these freight gardens throughout Chicagoland?
Absolutely. I mean, the bigger goal is to put one of our farms in every ward, in every community. Since it is that standard container size, too, you can fit it anywhere. You only need about 500 square feet. And then it's a blank canvas where we could put art and have local artists decorate the outside. So you can really get your neighborhood's culture and vibe right onto the container itself.
Well, we've heard about these pop-up businesses and freight containers, but your gardens, though, aren't you? Is there a roof on it? Do you have lights there, or is it open air? How does that work?
Well, it's a standard container. It's all 100% contained, and it is completely growing the plants with LED light system. So there's no natural sunlight. It's all a technology advanced farm system. So we have red and blue LED light sources that grow your plants the optimal age of their life.
I see. So say I want one of those in my neighborhood. Would I privately own it? Would I buy it from you? Or how does this work then?
Well, there's a couple ways that you can do it. Freight to Plate, we are a full service. So we bring not just the farm, but we handle all the logistics of bringing a farm into the neighborhood, making sure that your site is prepared and has utility. And really the best way to source one is we're working with nonprofits to get them donated to different neighborhoods. And then as a grouper, as we're working with a lot of real estate developers who want to integrate these into residential areas because it is such a small footprint.
Mary Catherine, how do you make money? What's the business model work like for you?
Well, we're in it together 50-50. I would like to say, Jacqueline and I split up our roles really interestingly. She goes by the hunter, where she really hunts out the best place for the farms to be located. And that includes like all the logistics of setting the property up, pulling utilities, making sure you have everything that you need, which is only a handful of things that the farm needs to run successfully. But she secures those. And I go by the gatherer. My background is in hospitality, specifically hospitality startups. So being able to bring this new way of sourcing food, of growing food, and then also distributing food. It's new, so we want to make sure that we're engaging in every community, whether that's, in one of the south or west sides of Chicago, in a large mixed-use development. Mm-hmm. It'll really be my role to engage that community, understand what they want to grow, how often they want to grow it, and then how we're going to distribute that food to get to the right people at the right time.
Well, you make it sound turnkey, but who will tend to the garden then? Who puts the soil in? Who plants the seedlings, et cetera?
Well, it's a completely soilless system, so it's a very clean system. And because it's completely contained and we control the nutrients in the water, the light, how often it's on, how strong it is, we control the pH level of the water and just the complete environment of the plant, it's able to grow almost essentially on its own. Huh. So we only need to give the farm about 15 to 20 hours of labor a week. And our first farm was just planted in the Fulton Market area, and your farmers are going to be Jacqueline and I.
Well, this is fascinating. Okay, so it's FTP, as in food to plate or freight to plate. FTP.farm is the website to find out more.
Yes.
FTP.farm. That's the website. Jacqueline and Mary Catherine Scala from the Saugonash neighborhood in Chicago. Ladies, well done. Fascinating. I'm sure we'll hear more from you and about this business. It's very intriguing.
Awesome, John. Thank you so much for having us on with you. Being Chicago natives, we grew up on WGN radio, so it's very humbling to be on it today with you.
Well, you've done good. Let's do this again, all right?
All right. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you, John.
12:36 on WGN Mother's Day this weekend, guys. I shouldn't have to remind you. Jared Melman's on the phone. He's the executive partner at Let Us Entertain You Enterprises, the big restaurant chain throughout Chicagoland. LEYE is their website. Jared, welcome back to WGN Radio. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Pretty good. In the scale of days of the year and holidays for a restaurant, how big is Mother's Day? Is Is that way up? Is that in your top five?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Mother's Day has become really a wonderful day for us and a wonderful day to celebrate mothers.
Is it so? Where are the restaurants in terms of capacity now?
We're still at 50% in Chicago, 75% in Vegas, and still at 25% out in Washington, D.C.
Oh, I didn't realize that. I thought that we were the most conservative place in America about capacities. Washington, D.C. is only 25%?
Yeah, still a little bit more conservative out there.
Yeah, I guess so. And so is pickup and delivery still a big part of Mother's Day this year because of the pandemic? We got into that routine. I know we can go inside, but how does that break out for you guys?
Yeah, I think it'll still be a big thing for this Mother's Day. You know, we have all sorts of gift packages and food packages and drink packages available. They're all listed on our website and did all sorts of fun things focused on mom.
I'm looking at the website printout. Here's what Beatrix River North, Fulton Market, Streeterville, and Oakbrook is doing. Mother's Day brunch to go. So this would be for 2, 4, 6. And this is the to go with flowers for dreams bouquet. It includes the mini pastry box, the lemon blueberry muffin, a gluten-free cream cheese coffee cake, spinach and feta croissant, melons and berries. I'm not done yet. I'm just getting to the good stuff now.
Yeah.
Brown sugar bacon, chicken sausage, lobster and crab enchiladas, and fresh squeezed Valencia orange juice. So that's all of that is in the brunch to go for 2, 4, 6?
Yep. Yep. You got it. Yeah.
$39.95 a person plus tax. That's pretty good.
Yeah, the team over at Beatrix does an amazing job with brunch.
Well, there are some places in town that are really known for brunch. I mean, in your family of restaurants, what would you say are the ones that are maybe most adept at brunch?
Sure. I don't know if you've ever gone over to Shaw's for brunch, but they put out a buffet that's just super impressive. And then I'm biased towards Hub 51, but they serve a breakfast burrito there that I just love. So I most weekends, my girlfriend and I end up at Hub for brunch for at least one of the days.
Yeah, no kidding. I'll have to check that out. I did notice on your site also, it sounds like you're doing if you want to pick up, let me just see if I've got this right, the best of Let Us Entertain You delivered. So if I go to this location, do I pick up from the different restaurants or what happens there? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do. We sort of aggregate all of your favorites. So you can order from Joe's and RPM Italian and any number of our restaurants, and we'll get it all compiled for you and actually deliver it to you. So we take care of all the difficult work, and all you have to do is order.
Okay. But I mean, I thought I had to go pick it up at Hubbard Street at that one location. You'll actually deliver that sort of mishmash of different places?
Exactly. We do both. That's something we started fairly early on. We knew that people were stuck at home, and we said, why don't we just make it easy for people to, you know, order from Joe's, order from a number of different places, and get it all delivered at once. So we have a team of people that have been doing that, and, you know, we found that people really love being able to mix and match.
What's reservations like? Typically, it'd be late in the season to make reservations for Mother's Day. Can you still get into some of these places?
There are still a handful of last-minute spots. You can check them all on our website, but a number of the places are booked up.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Still some to-go options, though, yeah.
Yeah, well, I think, frankly, a lot of people are more comfortable with that these days. Just don't let mom assemble everything when you bring it home. I mean, if it's if this is the Mother's Day thing, then, you know, mom is either you're going to take her out or you're going to bring the stuff home, and then you put out the plates and the knives and the forks and do it that way. Talk to me in general about how the city has been reopening. Where is your head as a restaurant group manager on how aggressive the city has been and where we should be right now? Are you pleased with the progress?
No, I was thrilled with, the announcement last week that we're going to be able to bring back our Windy City Smokeout. It'll be the first festival coming up this summer, July 8th through 11th. you know, the city's been very communicative with us, and I think they've been nice partners. And, you know, we just try to remember that no one's ever gone through anything like this. But, you know, I guess this whole time the term we've used is cautiously optimistic, and we're cautiously optimistic that things are going to continue moving in the right direction.
Are your restaurants profitable now? You know, this is a question we all talked about last year, but I suppose it's still germane this year at 50%. How are you guys holding up?
You know, I give a lot of credit to our teams. I mean, the creativity and the willingness to dig in and kind of do more with fewer people around has really paid off. And thankfully, you know, we have been profitable through a lot of this time. And again, I give that credit to our teams out there working their tails off.
Yeah. Have all of your properties stayed open, or did some of them have to close permanently?
Only a couple have closed permanently, but I would say 99% of our places have luckily survived and made it through this crazy time.
And by the way, last time I asked you this, I don't think you knew off the top of your head. How many properties is there?
It's about 100.
About 100.
All right. I got to get the exact number for you.
The next, I'm not going to put you on if you don't know that number next time, Jared. You have to know.
All right, I'll get it.
Jared Melman is the executive partner at Let Us Entertain You Enterprises all around the country, certainly Chicagoland. You can visit them at leye.com. That's where I found all of these menus and delivery options and pickup options. It's promising for Mother's Day. Hey, Jared, nice to talk to you again. Keep up the good work. Our best to everybody over there.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Mother's Day is this, I'm almost certain it's this Sunday. It's 12:43 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's time for more business news in the newsroom. This is Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Even with fewer people flying, the number of complaints soared at United Airlines in 2020. United ranked as one of the worst performers in complaints among the 10 major U.S. airlines, according to the annual Airline Quality Report compiled by Wichita State University. Complaints rose to nearly 12 per 100,000 passengers in 2020, from 1 per 100,000 passengers a year earlier. The single largest category for complaints involved refunds. Flight problems, delays, and cancellations are usually the biggest areas of complaints. Chicago-based Marge Wrigley is suing several online shops for selling THC-infused products that the company claims infringes on the candy maker's trademarks. The products targeted by the lawsuit include medicated Skittles, Starburst gummies, and Lifesavers medicated gummies. The suit says the products resemble Wrigley candies nearly identically and could pose a danger to children and adults alike who could easily mistake them for Wrigley products. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Here's the business of food, Steve.
Yeah, today's report, John, includes flying pigs. But first, let's talk about the chicken shortage we've been hearing about, except there is no shortage of chickens. Plenty of birds. In fact, more than usual.
There's more available chicken. The real issue right now is labor in our plant.
Yep. Can't find enough people who want to do the work of cutting up the wings and tenders. Christine McCracken is an analyst at Rabobank, where she is executive director of animal protein.
And a lot of that tied to some of the stimulus money that's making, you know, labor an issue across the board, and not just chicken plants, but in grocery stores and food service outlets. Driver shortages, it's really throughout the economy.
And she says the tight supply of chicken parts will likely get worse. As the weather warms, more of us are going to start grilling. And the return of two big chicken-consuming sectors, tourism-related businesses and schools, will increase the pressure on supply and on the cost.
But if you look at some products like wings, prices there on average in April were up, you know, some 170%. Just tremendous pricing strength because, you know, you can't make more chicken wings, right? there's only two on every chicken, right?
You're right, right. Only two wings per chicken. That brings me to the flying pigs. The pork industry is ready to fill the chicken wing void with pigs' wings. They've been around for a while. Perhaps they will see a rise in popularity now. They're made from the fibula of a pig's shank, lean, tender meat surrounding a bone, which conveniently sticks out for you to use as a handle. On the other end of the supply chain is another price problem, the cost of corn and other feed to grow chickens and pigs and any livestock. Futures at the Chicago Board of Trade and cash prices are the highest in 8 years, making expansion decisions by growers very difficult. And those numbers are pushing higher today. Corn is up 21.5 cents, beans are up 11, and wheat is trading about 6 cents higher. Today is National Orange Juice Day, and just out of curiosity, I checked on National Vodka Day. That doesn't happen until October 4th, and National Screwdriver Day isn't until December.
You think they'd line those up?
You'd think. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Amy Guth joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch. I've heard some chatter on the radio this morning about unruly passengers. I think we've all talked a little bit about it, but tell us what the story is here, Amy.
Yeah, that's right. So the FAA has warned of this spike in unruly and dangerous passenger behavior. To put some numbers behind that, I was really shocked to really, once you see the numbers, they say the FAA generally sees about 100 to 150 formal cases of bad passenger behavior. So that's not going to be all of it, but that's the things where, yes, I want to pursue this and file a complaint. Kind of, that's a formal case. But since the start of this year, they said that number has jumped up to 1,300, which is really significant if you're comparing that to 100 to 150 per year in a typical year. Now, a lot of that, they said this stems from passengers who refuse to wear masks and get combative, people that are drinking excessively on flights, or people that have engaged in alleged physical or verbal assault. So there, you know, we've seen some examples in the news of this lately, but Stephen Dixon, who's the administrator of the FAA, he was really very clear about this. He said, it is not permissible. We will not tolerate interfering with a flight crew or performance of their safety duties, period. And they're taking the zero tolerance approach to this kind of bad behavior. So unruly passengers now face potential criminal charges, fines up to $35,000, or lifetime bans on certain carriers. So we'll see what that does to maybe deter some of this, but those are pretty shocking numbers when we're, you know, generally looking at about 100, 150 cases of people, you know, getting out of control on a flight, and now 1,300, and it's only May the 5th.
So that's 1,300 this year, so multiply that by three if it stayed at the same rate, and you'd be at about 4,000. And that's the worst case scenarios. And isn't that interesting? Amy, I would imagine that we've had fewer people fly in the first 4 months this year than in most years. So it's even a higher percentage of people behaving badly.
Absolutely. I was just about to say, what's important to keep in mind here is the numbers are still far below what they were pre-pandemic in terms of volume of people flying. So that number to me is even more stark, given that fewer people are flying. There's a greater number of people, of the people that are flying, there's a greater percentage of them engaging in this really combative behavior in the air.
Mars and Mars Wrigley, what's the story here?
Yeah, so Mars Wrigley has filed a lawsuit trying to block several different online shops from selling some THC-infused products. They say they infringe on their trademarks. Here are the products. They are medicated Skittles, that's the name of them, Starburst gummies, and Lifesavers medicated gummies. These are made, they're sold under a couple of different websites called 2020edibles.com, IE420supply.com, and a couple of others. They've filed this lawsuit in the U.S. and in Canada. They're seeking $2 million in damages per counterfeit mark for each type of candy sold. They want all the profit from the sales, and they want all the products to be destroyed. There was a similar lawsuit over some of the e-cigarette cartridges. There was one that was described as candy flavored. Wrigley sued over that, saying that presented a risk of harm to children or the public at large. These in particular, they're calling them nearly identical. They said they nearly identically resemble the Wrigley candy. So we will have to watch this lawsuit. It was filed in U.S. District Court in California.
But they're using the trademark names of the candies in the name of their product. I don't know much about trademarks. I'm not a lawyer, but boy, I think you will get in trouble if you do that. You cannot do that.
Right. I mean, I was thinking of like when you see like a generic brand of cereal, it's not like Cheerios. It's like Honey O Loops or whatever, you know, like I feel like if you're calling it Starburst and Skittles and Lifesavers, you're probably, you know, kind of flying a little bit close to the sun. I have not seen these products. I wasn't able to see a picture of them, so I don't know what they look like in terms of does the packaging look the same? That certainly wouldn't help their case either, but this will be an interesting case to follow. A lot of cannabis, you know, so much of the cannabis industry is still a little unregulated, or, you know, it's so regulated that in some ways, but like the advertising part and the trademark part, I think there will be, you know, some places where they butt heads with some other trademarks. So this will be an interesting one to see.
One last story here. Speaking of consumables, wine went to space. I don't know about this.
I didn't know this either. I thought this was really interesting. So there is a wine that is normally $10,000 a bottle. So it's not, this is not two buck chuck here. And it went to space. It spent a year in orbit at the International Space Station. Christie's Auction House has this now. And it is being sold for, you know, they don't know exactly what it's going to fetch at auction, but they're saying, you know, probably somewhere in the neighborhood of $1 million. I thought it was very funny. The wine and spirits department head at Christie's, he described this as it has been matured in a unique environment, which I'll say it has. Indeed.
I wonder who gets the money. I didn't know that they had a wine list in space. Does NASA get the money, or I wonder whose bottle of wine that is, who captures the profits?
I know. I mean, how do you decide whose wine is going up there and what happens after that? But I think it's an interesting experiment. What would be unfortunate, though, is if you spend all this money on this wine that's supposed to have just this unbelievable texture and unbelievable flavor, and then it turns out sending wine to space makes it kind of a dud. That would be really a shame.
Yeah, I was thinking that's no guarantee that it improves the wine. It does well on Earth. That's the experiment. Amy Guth on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thank you, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.